Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. You don't have to wear a mask to enjoy the show, but you better wear one if you go out. Let's defeat this virus and play basketball in 2021. Today, we have Coach Greg Todd of Morehead State University on the podcast, who breaks down some of the differences and similarities he has found transitioning from coaching high school to college. He touches on what made him so successful at both levels and why Morehead, Kentucky has the best Wendy's in the country. Hope you enjoy. Today we are joined by Coach Greg Todd of Morehead State University. Coach Todd has been extremely successful at both the high school and collegiate level. He has had unprecedented success at Morehead State by winning 20 games for three straight seasons for the first time in school history. At the high school level, he is still the only coach in either boys or girls to reach four straight state finals appearances. Coach Todd, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks so much, Coach. I appreciate the nice intro, and I've been blessed. Just finished my 28th year as a head coach in women's and girls basketball. And actually, this will be the first year, this will be my 15th year in college and 14 years as a high school coach. So definitely a good balance there. But all my success has been due to having a very good staff and certainly even more important, great players, and had been a good ride. And definitely hoping this COVID-19 can get under control, and look forward. We've got a very talented team, I feel like, this year coming in at Morehead State.
I think the world's behind you on that one. I think we're all trying to get to some sense of normalcy and you know, be safe while we do it. But let's jump right into this thing. I think anybody who kind of watches you guys play, they understand a big strength of what you guys do. You really seem to get up and down and take advantage of transition situations as much as possible. Last season, about 20% of the time, you guys shot, your shots were in transition, which was the second highest in the conference behind SEMO. Why do you put such a premium on playing in transition?
It's something I've always done all 28 years. And actually, last year's team, we probably didn't have the depth and the personnel to push the ball. Two years ago, and we graduated. We had five seniors on a team that we were able to upset Ohio State in the NIT, and had a really good run that year. We were ranked on synergy. I know you look at synergy quite a bit. It evaluates a lot of things. We were actually second in the country on efficiency and running the ball. So the reason I like to play in transition is, one, it allows us to look at more players early, especially early on. I feel like you can get some good shots out of transition. It keeps your opponent from crashing the boards. I mean, if we know we're playing against a team that walks the ball down the floor, we'll send four people to the glass hard against those guys. And a lot of times we play, and teams will have sometimes just one or two players going to the offensive glass. That gives us a good advantage of getting more possessions. I feel like you gain more possessions, and I also think you can wear teams down. I think in women's basketball, there's just not as much depth throughout the college game or high school game. So if we have opportunity to wear our opponents down, it can be a big plus. And we get a lot of easy buckets, I think, as well as open perimeter shots. And transition defense, I don't think some teams do as well as they do in their half court. So it's a big plus. And like I said, normally on a good year, we'll have 10 players that we can rotate, maybe not all equally, but it gives more players opportunities. And then as the year goes along, obviously, I think it gets tougher to score in transition, and we have to work and become better and better in our half court offense. And sometimes you'll have a player maybe that plays themselves out of the rotation if they're not as efficient, but it gives more opportunities, and And then late in the year, if you have an injury, you maybe that player who has come down some on minutes will still have more experience for you as you get into that. And I think players enjoy playing a fast style, and been all 28 of my years just felt like it's been a good thing. We start out preseason running a lot of transition, and you know it's easier non-conference, but you know it does get tougher once you get in January and February, and I do think at that time we do have more sets that we run, and we try to get better in our half court offense.
So I think, and you hit on my next kind of point, was every transition coach that I hear speak, they usually allude to the fact that as it gets later, it gets harder. It gets harder to run consistently and to score as frequently in transition. And so, and you kind of mentioned, do you think that benefits you more than it hurts you in that, okay, later in the, you know, we can maybe run some stuff that people haven't seen as much or haven't got to scout as much? Or do you feel like maybe, you know, well, we haven't had as much time to work on some of those grinded out situations, or how do you balance that out?
No, I think that's the thing you do have to weigh out. You're probably not going to be as strong in your half court game throughout most of the year, but I do think you're able to add. We will add a set or two in the half court as the year progresses, and I feel like we become more efficient, and we still look to push the ball, and especially if we have decent depth and good athletes, we still can get transition buckets in conference play. But it is, I think it does get tougher, but I think it's an advantage for us because we can still do both. It's just teams are better once they've seen you play and played against you, and it makes it tougher. I think you get more good shots by being able to get into that transition, and we still try to push even into conference play. But yes.
Let's say you're playing a, you know, somebody that you may consider more talented than you. Maybe you're playing, you know, a non-conference, you know, powerhouse or somebody that they also are looking to push in transition and play as fast as possible. Will you consider, you know, hey, maybe against these guys, we need to try to do something differently, or will you say, we're going to do what we do and try to be better today?
That's a great question. And of course, we play Baylor. We've been playing Baylor. I think this is our third straight year, and we've competed pretty well there. We've played against Kentucky every year that I've been here. We played them. We played West Virginia. We played Michigan State last year. We played Missouri this year. So we have one of the toughest non-conference. Part of it is to help our program with guaranteed money, and it also makes our players tougher. But you're exactly right. Those programs, you can line up and run with them all day long, and I'm a little stubborn. I like for us to do that some, but it also, you're playing against a Baylor who's number one or two in the country. We've played them the last couple of years. We change our philosophy a little bit against those guys and push if we've got numbers, but we try to frustrate them a little bit, knowing that they are wanting to play up and down with us. So if we slow it down, it frustrates them, I think, for us to do that. And we've had some good stretches against Baylor, even though the scores have, if you just look at them, are not real close. But we've done a pretty pretty decent job, I think, against them. But we still will take opportunities. But you're right. We know we're being out athleted and skilled at every position. So we're more cautious against the team like that, and we do change our game plan a little bit.
Sure. And do you, like, just personally, do you think it's easier to speed someone up when they're trying to play slow, or to slow somebody down if you're trying to slow the game down?
Well, I think for us, if a team plays slow, we definitely try to, you know, definitely pick up our pace. So I think that's from our end is what we like to do. On the opposite end, the only times we've really done that's when we're just outmatched to where we would really try to slow it down. So it's kind of a tough question because we're just outmatched. But I think overall that's our game plan, is to speed up teams. And if they like to run, like you mentioned, SEMO typically is a team that plays fast. The score's typically going to be pretty high when we play another team who has our philosophy. And, you know, Jacksonville State's a team we've had pretty good success with. We actually swept them last year. They play all half court. They don't push the ball near the level we do. They play great defense. They're a good team in our league. But it depends a little bit on each matchup. But definitely our goal is to try to speed up a team that's playing slow.
This next question comes close to my heart here. Since being in Louisville for a year and anticipating next year us being deep and fast, at our level at least, it seems like people are either very good in the half court or very good in transition, but typically not both. But I think a big part of it is a lot of time the up-tempo teams take early bad shots when they can't get something in transition. How do you create a mindset shift for your players to understand trying to find a good shot in transition, but if it's not there, then being willing maybe to run a little offense to find a good shot?
Yeah, we talk a lot about shot selection. You're going to take a few bad ones, but if it's the same player over and over taking poor percentage shots, I mean, particularly in Division I with as much time as we have, I think we can straighten that out a little bit easier. But you want your players to feel loose, and I think you want them to feel free. But we try to get to the rim, and we try to obviously shoot open threes if they're there. If a player has a mid-range game, we're not opposed to that. I think the analytics would tell you that threes and layups are the best percentage, but I've had some players who can make 50% of that 15 to 12 foot shot. So I think field goal percent is very, very important, and I think it has to be addressed. And I do watch teams. I scratch my head sometimes, and I'm sure people watch our team. They probably scratch their heads too. But it is frustrating to watch some players take bad shot after bad shot, and particularly non-threes, long twos that are just analytically bad shots. So we would address it. I try typically not. I think that's more our job to do outside of that game, as far as the game. If a player takes one bad shot or two in a game, we probably may talk about it later. I try not to get into the player's head too much, unless it's something where it's like shot five or six bad shots, and at some point you're definitely going to talk to your players. But I think that is a big, big part of coaching, and I think shot selection is very important, and part of the reason we like to play fast is we feel like we get more good shots. But you don't want to have, you know, too many forced shots for sure.
Yeah, and I think that brings up one thing I think a lot of people really struggle with, and that is addressing shot selection. I heard one college coach say, shot selection is on the coach. It's not on the player. And you kind of get what you tolerate or you get what you allow. But what are some of the ways you found most successful in addressing that, whether it be, you know, maybe you sit down with a kid and you show them the numbers, maybe you show them film, maybe. But what have you found for them to be the most receptive to it?
I think you know, we should all be there for the common goal of being efficient, good teams, and certainly with as much film that's out there today, we would sit down with them typically privately and say, hey, here's your missed shots. It's very easy to pull those up, and you see kind of what you're doing. We do like you, and here's some good shots, and try not to always put the emphasis on whether it goes in or not, but just the type, you know, if it's being challenged and depending on the situation and can you make that shot? And obviously that's big as far as I mentioned, I think game day, I'm always a little careful not to go overboard at the game. If a player takes a bad shot. Now, you know, some coaches, you know, I think you have to, there's a fine line. You do want, like I said, I think you want your players to have somewhat of a green light and feel comfortable taking open shots or good shots. So that's kind of the tricky part of it, but definitely film and letting them take a look at it and continuing to work on their shot and getting a lot of reps and practice on the shots that they take in the games.
I've had a lot of coaches give different thoughts on how much a player can improve as a shooter and whether it's even worth the effort to try to drastically improve your team's jump shooting, as opposed to maybe spending that time working on finishing or their mid-range game. How do you reconcile that, and how much time would you spend developing shooters, and how much can a player really improve their jump shooting by the time they're maybe a sophomore, junior in high school?
Yeah, being a high school coach, I always felt like during the season was not a great time to work or try to tweak on somebody's shot. Obviously, college is different, but I do think it's worth spending some time if there's a major hitch in their shot. I think I always like to do that during the off season, and some players can do that well, and others seem to be reluctant or have a hard time doing it. And that's a very good question. I know we did try to change some when I was in high school, and even in college, in the off season, we've had a player or two that where we can use video, and they've tweaked a little, maybe moving their hand over on the ball a little bit, or getting their elbow underneath the ball, squaring up, or you know, a few different things. But I think it's a little bit up to that individual, and I know they're younger at your age, and I think you have. Or at your level, they're younger, and you want to try to get them a little more efficient. And if they're willing to do that, make the change, then I think it's great to do that. So, yeah.
Do you spend a ton of time in practice during the season on shooting?
You know, I think in Division I, we have the luxury of having more time. As a high school coach, we did spend a lot of time on shooting. The players have access to get up some shots, but we do, especially around conference time, once we know what we're doing more, we'll probably spend more time getting reps up and getting shots. So yeah, I think we probably do more than average. And in high school, I know we spent an incredible amount of time on shots and getting game shots up.
Sure. Yeah, I think this will really interest a lot of the high school coaches. But what was the biggest change for you when you went from coaching at the high school level to the collegiate level? And if you are coaching in high school right now, what are the things you'd be doing that what would you be doing the most to separate your program from others?
Yeah, that's a good question. I went from a team, and I think we were number three in the nation when I left Lexington Catholic to Transylvania University, who's coming off of like a 9-win season. So I know a good friend of mine said he felt like we had college players playing high school. He said, I knew you could be successful with college players playing high school. He said, now you're going to have high school kids playing college. We'll see how well you can coach. But yeah, so it's a little different for me, but Transylvania was a great place for me to work, and we ended up having they were NAI and had some pretty good years there, and then they switched to Division III non-scholarship, and program it went down just a little bit, but we had some great young ladies there, and it was very fun. You know, having more time, I think, was the biggest thing, the maturity. But you know, high school's great. I think it means so much to young people to play, and it can become a little bit of a job in college. But I think with high school today, I think now this is a different year. We'll see. I know players have had more time, hopefully working on their skills if they've had access to a decent goal and less time playing. But I think overall, travel ball, there's a good place for it. I think there's, you know, it can be effective, but I think it's probably overdone in general, but not in all cases. But I liked, when I was a high school coach, we sort of limited it. We let our players play some travel ball, but we also got in the gym and had a good program, and I felt like that was something that helped us. And but travel ball has grown in the years that I've been out of high school to definitely a different level. That was one thing. We had a lot of travel teams wanting our players, but we made sure they got enough time working on their skills and not just playing games, you know, all week. So that I think that was important for us is for them to get skill development.
And in a typical summer for high school, June is filled with, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to play as a team in June. And I've seen some teams that'll play 20 plus games and work on some skills. And then I've seen some teams that'll go play 10 games and spend a lot of time, you know, working out their players. Was June that way for you guys? And how did you attack that part of the summer?
You know, I was blessed. I had a really good assistant coach, Tony Talbot, when I was at Lexington Catholic. And he was the head coach when we played games. And it was, I was at all the games. I sat by him. I was his assistant. And that was good for me to have a little different level. I was sitting down and had a different perspective. And we tried to play. It would depend a little bit on each team. If you felt like you had a lot, if I had a lot of new players, we would typically try to play some more games in the summer so that group could gel. If we had quite a bit of experience, we would play in some, but we spent a lot of time in practicing, you know, during the summer. So it depended a little bit on who we had, but we always played some games in June for sure. We played a pretty full schedule, but then we had July, and other than the dead period, we had the full month of July that we spent a lot of time working on skill development during that time as well.
Yeah, that's definitely different now. It's May and July is you know, almost all of your players are playing travel ball, so it does get tough. Coach, let's move to the last segment here. We're running out of time, but I'm going to throw a full court press on you.
Sure.
All right, you're going to have 10 seconds or less to answer. Does high school need a shot clock?
Absolutely, I think so.
College coaches are all the same.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I enjoyed not having one, but I think it would be good for the game.
What's the best basketball resource for high school coaches to learn from?
You know, I like Championship Production. They have some free clinics. They have they have a service where you can get access to a lot of videos, a lot of different ideas. So that's probably the one that I like the most.
I agree. And they also do an all access series where you can kind of watch the first 3 days of a full practice. And I've enjoyed that series as well. Do you spend more time in practice on offense or defense?
Me, offense, but my staff, they'll make me, we've got a very good defensive coach. We end up probably spending more on offense, but when I was in high school, it was probably 75-25. Today, probably 60-40 offense.
Favorite high school gym in Kentucky?
I got two favorites, Lexington Catholic in Berea, probably just because I coach there. Clay County is a pretty cool place where Bobby Keith coached. I mean, you can kind of go through, got a lot of places I enjoy, but I just spent a lot of time. My alma mater is Berea High School, but Lexington Catholic, I was there when the new gym was built, college floor. So Danny Haney Court, I think is the name of it, Father Reverend Buter Gymnasium.
All right, and best kept secret food joint in Moorhead?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a secret. The best, everybody that comes or lives here will tell you that Wendy's is the best Wendy's in the country. but that may not really attract people to hear, but there's a Malini's is a little Italian restaurant here that a lot of people like. I know the teams, it's an Italian place, so they do a lot of pregame meals for teams that come in and play Moorhead State, and it's right by the campus.
All right, good deal. We'll bring our team to that Wendy's. We'll check that one out. That's more up our alley when we're that way.
Yeah, you stop. It's not too far from the exit, and no one will even go to another Wendy's once you go to the one here at Moorhead. Very 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 good.
Coach, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Wyatt. Appreciate it. Good luck to you guys, and stay safe.
Likewise.
Appreciate it.
For Coach Todd, this has been Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. Next Thursday, we have Hall of Fame third region coach Mike Harper of Muhlenberg County on to discuss winning big and changing with the game. Until then, keep getting better.